All right, coming to you from 4,200 feet in the hills of Oregon, it is the voice of Chi-Town, the reddest beard in the high desert, your host of the MOA broadcast, Sam Wilson. How are we doing out there, folks? We've got a great show planned today. Let's get right into it. We've got a couple of interesting tidbits we'll get to here. We've got presidential assassination threats, Florida man, homicidal video games, same thing in this particular case, a little bit of overlap. Let's just say Florida is the gift that keeps on giving. Big news on ivermectin. ivermectin. We'll get to that in a little bit, but if you've followed along, especially during COVID and other things, ivermectin has been a frequent topic of conversation. So that'll be some interesting news we got there. And then we have some more hapless hikers and motorists, along with good survival situations on how you can make it out alive. So let's go ahead and get right into it. Our first story, we go to Florida also. So we've got two Florida man stories today. A Florida man allegedly threatened to assassinate President Donald Trump and launch missiles to destroy New York in a series of 911 calls. Now, it doesn't say if he means New York State, New York City, or some other part of New York, just that he planned to destroy New York with missiles. Apparently, he was making these threats to 911 itself. Justin Blackston, 34, of Loxahatchee, made multiple 911 calls to the Palm Beach Sheriff's Office on February 26th, citing an arrest report from the Sheriff's Office. "I need a ride to the airport to be taken to the White House to assassinate the president," he allegedly said in one of the calls. "I'm about to launch the missiles to destroy New York," he allegedly said in another call. "I'm a Confederate soldier."
Oh, man.
There we go. "I'm a Confederate soldier and I'm looking to get revenge. My missiles are attracted to Donald Trump's tower." Wow. In other calls, he allegedly told dispatchers to tell the FBI that I'm a mass murderer, and he wanted Trump to go over to his house because tomorrow's his last day on planet Earth. Deputies responded to his home. He was not there, but they arrested him the following day. He was charged with making a threat to throw, place, project, or discharge a destructive device and falsely reporting a bomb or explosion and making false 911 calls. According to a former Secret Service agent, Jason Russell, a 10-year veteran, he told the outlet the 911 recording sounded like the idle rant of somebody who's mentally deranged. The man has an extensive history of mental health-related encounters with local police. His bond was set at $35,000, and a hearing in mental health court was set for April 16. Wow, what a way to kick off your day. Multiple threats to assassinate the president, launch missiles, destroy New York. I'm not really sure where the Confederate soldier part comes from, though, and he's looking to get revenge. I mean, he's down south, I guess, in Florida, so I don't know about that one, where that all came together. Either way, he is in custody, I believe, and we will hear more from him on April 16. Now we move over a little bit to Fernandina Beach, Florida. Again, also in Florida, an online altercation led to real-life attempted murder charges after deputies say a New Jersey man flew to Florida, snuck into the home of a person he met online, and attacked him with a hammer in the middle of the night. This is a weird one, Nassau County Sheriff Bill Leeper said during a press conference. The sheriff states that the man, Edward Kang, 20, hopped on a plane from Newark, New Jersey. I don't blame him for wanting to leave Jersey. If you ever live in the Northeast, most people try and avoid New Jersey at all costs. I'll just say that and we'll leave it there. Maybe we'll get into that on a topic of a future show. But he got on a plane from Newark to Jacksonville, Florida, late Friday night. Upon landing, according to the sheriff, he got an Uber, checked into a hotel around 2 a.m. Then, I don't know if it happened right then or the next day. I can't imagine any hardware stores being open at 2 a.m., but it just says he then went to an area hardware store and purchased a hammer and a flashlight. Around 2 a.m. on Sunday, armed with his new hammer, the man entered the home of a gamer he met online. So apparently these two were gaming. I don't know much about video games. Excuse me, so I can't speak intelligently to that. But apparently they were on some type of, the sheriff speaks to it later on. He said that they were playing some type of game where you could fight and kill your opponent online. And I guess clearly there was some kind of back and forth with the with personal information, because it seems he knew exactly where to go to find this person. But anyway, the man comes back at 2 a.m. on Sunday. He walks right through an unlocked door. So the guy's, his front door isn't even locked, or some door to his home. His house is unlocked. The guy just walks right in at 2 a.m. What's the guy doing? The victim is playing video games. You can't make this up. So the aggressor came in. The victim was playing video games. He had taken a break to go to the bathroom. However, once he opened the door, he noticed the suspect standing with a hammer raised in the air in an anticipated strike position, wearing all black, gloves, and a mask. So he's standing there like Michael Myers while this guy is going to the bathroom. Now imagine this. You're just sitting there playing video games at 2 a.m. in your home. You come out of the bathroom, and there's a guy standing there with a mask on, dressed all in black, wearing gloves. It doesn't say what kind of mask. I'm just going to, in my mind, I'm going with the Michael Myers creep style mask. That just makes perfect sense to me. And he's wielding a hammer held overhead, ready to do you some bodily harm. What a wild way to end your video game break. He probably had some Hot Pockets or pizza roll or something right there too. And I guess those are going to get cold now because these guys are going to the hospital. He broke into the victim's home to, we believe, kill the victim, the sheriff said. The suspect and the victim then began to struggle, and the victim wrestled the suspect to the ground. While the two were fighting, the victim's stepfather heard screams. When he entered the room and saw what was happening, he and his stepson disarmed the aggressor and held him until deputies arrived. Both men were taken to an area hospital for medical treatment, and then the aggressor was taken into custody. When asked why he did what he did, why he flew down here to, or flew down there to Florida from New Jersey and broke into this man's home and attacked and assaulted him, apparently, allegedly, with a hammer, his reply was, "He is a bad person online." The sheriff simply replied, "I would say, Mr. Kang, it's going to be a long time before you play video games again." Man, what in the world are they doing down there in Florida? I guess, okay, technically, I guess you can't blame all of this on Florida. The quote-unquote, the bad guy of the story is from Jersey, which, I mean, I wouldn't want to go there. No matter, I'd much rather be in Florida than New Jersey, all things considered, on every which way. But although there was some really good Italian food in New Jersey, I got to give them that. Had a lot of good pizza, a few good steaks in New Jersey, and some good hot dogs, actually. That being said, I could do without it, especially the cost of going over there and traveling. But man, what a wild, wild story. Okay, we go next to Linn County, Oregon. This is about 2 hours south of Portland, give or take. For those of you non-Oregonians, three lost or stranded drivers were rescued from snowy forest roads in Linn County Wednesday morning, according to the OSP. That's Oregon State Police. Shortly after 9 a.m., officers saw a car sitting on the shoulder of Highway 20 near milepost 68. They determined the driver, a 30-year-old woman, had left her vehicle for unknown reasons and walked up a nearby Forest Service road. Yeah, there's not enough information, really, to figure out exactly what happened to get her here. But this lady, seemingly, again, we don't have a lot of facts in the story, but she made some seemingly very poor decisions. She left her vehicle to go up a service road. I don't know if she was familiar with the area and thought she knew a way out. A lot of times, these service roads, they go nowhere. They lead you into a place where lumber is cut or, you know, a number of other things are done, but they oftentimes will take you deeper into the wilderness and they don't take you anywhere. Now, maybe this one didn't. There's a lot of service roads around here that they go nowhere, and they get very rough very quickly. A lot of them are not maintained very well at all. So she left. She abandoned her vehicle. I guess it did not run anymore. It doesn't really say in the story that I could see. She walked up a nearby service road. The Linn County Search and Rescue and an OSP team with a tracking dog helped search for the woman and found her lost and in distress about a mile from her car. So this is really the meat and potatoes, the heart of what we do here at the MOA, the Make It Out Alive broadcast. We look at situations like this. What could we do differently? Sometimes these stories are humorous. This lady makes that okay. So, you know, a chuckle is okay. Unfortunately, sometimes they don't end so well. But what we like to do is look at what went wrong and what can we learn from this? What are practical, you know, solutions you can implement today to not have this happen? Now, this one, some of this seems pretty common sense. If your vehicle goes down, typically, you're frequently recommended to stay with the vehicle. It's a lot easier to locate a vehicle than it is a person. And this is proven out in this case. They found her vehicle right there on the side of the highway. They needed a search and rescue team, an SAR team, and dogs, or a dog, to find her on a forestry service road. So again, I don't know what her motivation was. Maybe she had a medical episode too. We don't know. It says OSP troopers stayed with her, built a fire, and gave her food and emergency blankets while a search and rescue team brought a snowcat to carry her back to the highway. A snowcat is one of those vehicles that, I mean, they're great for going, you know, basically all terrain. They're on tracks frequently to get her back to the highway. She was then taken to an area hospital for a medical evaluation. Now, get a load of this. While this is happening, the Linn County Sheriff's Office received and responded to two separate calls from drivers stranded on forest roads in the snow. Sheriff Michelle Duncan asked people to remember to have a plan and bring emergency supplies whenever driving in snow or winter conditions. Always let a friend know, things we've talked about, let someone know where you're going to be. A good idea to keep your car winter ready. And that's what we're going to get to here momentarily, is what you should have in your vehicle kit. And again, this lady may have been having a medical emergency that prevented her from thinking clearly or whatever. We don't know why she left her vehicle and why they were looking for, if she had cell service. None of those things are answered by this particular article. So the crux of the matter here is, had she been in good health and okay, she may have, if she had the items she needed, she probably could have just stayed with her vehicle until help came. Now, maybe if it was cold enough and she didn't think she could stay in her car, I don't know. Like I said, bit of an interesting story. This can happen to anybody, though. True life story. When I was a kid, I remember I had to be about, I remember the jacket that I had on, and I had that jacket when I was about 12 to 14 years old. So one night, I worked nights with my dad occasionally from a very young age. And we were on our way home, and it was the middle of winter. And this is in Missouri, rural Missouri. Now, if you've never been to the Midwest is kind of an interesting climate situation. We get very, very hot summers and very, very cold and snowy, icy winters. In the Midwest, we frequently get ice storms, which can be very, very damaging and destructive. Ice is far worse than snow, usually. It's basically impossible to drive safely on in most cases. And it brings down a lot of power lines, all kind of stuff. So fortunately, no snow or ice that night, but it was very cold. I remember thinking, you know, as we were driving out that night at around 10 or 11, excuse me, that I should probably bring either a larger coat or scarf and gloves and such, but I didn't, because the reason being, we were driving a brand new car. My dad had just got this car. And so, you know, you think, hey, nothing can happen. It's a brand new vehicle. Nothing's going to go wrong. Plus, I was 12 or 13 years old. So on our way back, I remember I was checking my watch. I had a Timex Ironman on, and it was around, it was like 2:30 something or so in the morning. And all of a sudden, boom, we had a blowout on this deserted state highway. Very remote, relatively speaking. And we're on the side of the road, and it's like, great. So we get out, like, let's pull over to a safe spot. We're going to walk back there and get the spare tire and change this thing. Open the trunk, and there's no spare tire. Now, I don't know why there was no spare tire in a brand new vehicle, but that was failure number one right there. We should have checked that. My dad, if you want to blame him, I don't. Everybody makes mistakes. He was a real good dude. You want to check and make sure your spare tire is there. Make sure it's aired up. I needed my spare tire a couple of months ago, and it was flat. Fortunately, I have an inflator in the vehicle, so no big deal. But There were no other tools, no other kit. I think we had a flashlight, but that was it. So what did we do? We had to hoof it. Now, we were at this point about 13, 14 miles from home, and it was bitter cold. So walking all the way home was not an option. This is before cell phones, man. So nobody had like a cell phone to, and even if they, we had had one, I don't think they were out yet. But even if we had had one, or not commonly anyway, there would have been no reception there. So we did something that would be almost unthinkable in today's world. We walked up to the nearest home we could find at like 2:33 in the morning and knocked on the door. And they opened it and they let us in their house. And my dad called home and mom came and got us. And we came back the next day and got the vehicle taken care of. But we had a failures on multiple levels there. The tire wasn't there. We weren't prepared with a toolkit and a number of other things. So it can happen to anybody. You can better believe, though, the next day, my dad got that vehicle fully outfitted for just such emergencies. So fortunately, no casualties in that story. And that brings us to our vehicle emergency kit. What should you have in a vehicle emergency kit? I didn't do an exhaustive write-up because this is going to depend on your area, where you live, the weather, climate, how far away you are from, you know, your next town and whatever. I'm going to go through most of what I didn't pull my whole kit out and go all the way through, but I did look at it and go by memory and pull a few of the components out. Here's what we got in my vehicle emergency kit. I live at 4,200 feet in the hills of Oregon. We have pretty long, cold and sometimes harsh winters. So that's going to be probably the exposure will be the biggest danger here. So I kind of focused on that. I have multiple blankets. I've also got a spare pair of gloves and like a beanie, a sock cap type thing. Obviously a couple of bottles of water. You want to make sure if you have water bottles that these are not filled to capacity, because if you live in a cold climate and they freeze, they will burst. And when you need them, they will be dripped out all over the back, you know, the back seat of your car on the floorboards or whatever else. So just keep that in mind. Just throwing a brand new sealed water bottle in there may not be the best choice. Some snacks, nothing crazy or extensive with food in my particular case. I don't really think I'm going to be spending multiple days, hopefully, in the vehicle, unless something really goes wrong. If there was an emergency that was specific, then I would probably, you know, try and plan ahead. So things like granola bars or power bars, that kind of stuff, nothing really complicated. It's basically going to be to munch on, hopefully, while you're safe and waiting for rescue of some sort. Flashlight, any guy in America, most guys in America probably got two or three flashlights stuffed in their car in multiple places. Flares, this is particularly important if you're in a very dark area or if you're like on a blind curve to let people know to slow down as they come around if your vehicle is stuck and stranded in the road or whatever. Fire starting kit, self-explanatory. Tire repair plugs. If you use these or if you have these, make sure you know how to use them. It's very easy to plug your own tire. In fact, I've done it on the side of the road multiple times. I've done it on the side of a highway. I've done it in gas station parking lots. I've done it in my driveway. It's very easy to do. Just make sure that you then also have an inflator to be able to air your tire up afterwards. So you can easily do this on the side of the road, though. Not that big of a deal. Let's see. A jack, spare tire, the appropriate lug wrench that you're going to need. And I always throw a 2x4 or one to 2 foot length in there, or maybe a small piece of plywood or something, because sometimes you may be on ground that is very soggy or wet and damp. And if you do that and you jack the vehicle up, it may just sink into the ground. So a piece of wood, you have to make sure you do it safely, but a piece of wood can oftentimes prevent that. I've been broken down on like gravel roads or on roads that don't have a shoulder and you have to pull into the grass. And if I hadn't had a piece of wood to put underneath the jack, I would have never got the vehicle raised because you start jacking it up and the jack just goes right into the ground. Let's see. A basic toolkit. I've had to change serpentine belts, alternators, and batteries, and a number of other things right on the side of the road. If you have a basic toolkit, usually a good socket set and a few screwdrivers and a pair of pliers or two, you can get through a lot if you have a little bit of practice and knowledge beforehand on how to use those items. A signaling device, we're going to get into that momentarily. A battery jump box, and let's see. Now, if you're in a rural area or wherever your area of operations is, if it is legal and safe for you to do so, it's not a bad idea to have a firearm under certain situations or circumstances. I'll give you two stories. The first is tragic, but okay, let's just get right into it. A buddy of mine once was driving down a country road and he struck a dog. Okay. Now he gets out of the car. He's obviously very much upset and he goes back. The dog is, it's not in good shape. Okay. So he's like, I gotta put this thing down. This is like 25, maybe 30 years ago. This is a while back, 25 years ago. So he's in the middle of nowhere. And so he goes and he doesn't have a firearm in the vehicle. So he goes and
the story is horrible.
I'm sorry, but this is a true story. It's horrible. He goes and gets a tire iron and he thinks, okay, if I can just knock the dog out first, then I can, you know, finish the job. So he starts hitting this dog in the head with the tire iron and he cannot knock it out. Boom. Nothing. Boom. He's smacking this dog with the tire iron. The dog won't go out. So after several strikes, he's sitting there thinking, oh my God, he's ready to cry. He feels horrible. The dog is obviously feeling even worse. He's bleeding and moaning and yelping and whimpering. And all of a sudden, another vehicle comes pulling up. Guess who? It's the dog's owners. So they pull up and this guy is beating on their dog with a tire iron. And they, of course, some very colorful language and explanations follow. Long story short, they take the dog into the vet to be, you know, euthanized. He leaves at that point. He gets a letter. I don't know how he finds it. They call him or whatever. A couple of weeks later, the dog survived. I swear to goodness, this is a true story. So in that case, we're glad he didn't have a firearm. But I've got a story of a mountain lion. We're not going to be able to get to it in this half of the show. You never know. I've had other friends that have hit and struck animals, and they had to dispatch them because they're in a very remote area. The animal is suffering. So anyway, we're not going to recommend anything. You need to find out what's legal for you in your area, but that's something to think about. We're going to get into this a little deeper in the second half of the show, and we're also going to get into the ivermectin story. So stay tuned. We got more coming up in the second half. More Make It Out Alive with Sam Wilson after this.